Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Feel good this winter by getting the flu vaccine at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Hello again, Colm O'Mungoin here, sitting in for Claire. Well, a well-known face from our TV screens as the former RTE Midlands correspondent Ciarán Mullooly. Don't call him a blast from the past, because he's written a series of essays on his life after RTE and how rural Ireland is faring and the concept of a transition away from former industries such as peat harvesting. And he has called his book of essays, The Future Is Now. Ciarán, how are you keeping?
Good morning, Colm.
I suppose you're involved in many things. You're involved in community and social enterprise down in Roscommon. So what brought you to write this particular book, and what's the main driving concern behind it?
Yeah, so 2 years out of RTE, Colm, and I'm a community development worker in the community with Roscommon Leader Partnership. Before I left, I wrote a book in 2015, which was looking forward to the changes in the economy in the Midlands. Bord na Mona were coming to an end. Everybody, despite the myth, everybody in who worked for Bord na Mona knew it was coming to an end. But we had this period, we were supposed to have a period of just transition. So every time I did an interview with anybody in the Midlands, they said, you know, in the future, down the road, we'll be looking to different things. We'll be looking to decarbonisation, we'll bring different challenges. But then what happened to couple of years ago, the future became now, because the 10-year just transition period, which everybody expected in Kildare and Laois and Offaly, disappeared overnight. A couple of reasons for it: legal challenges, changes in government, changes of policy in government as well. And as a result of all that, instead of having 10 years of just transition, the people of Kildare, Offaly, Laois, Longford, Roscommon got 2 years to change their life around. And one of the reasons I wrote the book was to try and focus on the fact that the future is actually now. It's no longer 10 years down the road.
Right. Well, let's look at the opportunities of, you know, the move away from peat. As you say, people in the Midlands knew this was coming down the track with the closure of power stations and the transition of Bord na Mona itself from being primarily concerned with peat harvesting to being many things, including, you know, a waste concern as well. What are the opportunities as you see them from things like, you know, rewetting the bogs, transitioning to sustainable sources of energy for people in the Midlands? And how do we make sure that the people in those communities benefit from this?
I think tourism is straight away is the answer, Colm, to you. There's a new scheme started at the moment. Bord Fáilte are out there doing their best promoting it, called regenerative tourism. So what is it? It's €68 million of European Union funding coming. It's open at the moment. The applications are being taken for regenerative tourism, which I suppose is probably anything that doesn't involve concrete and tarmac, Adam. You're talking about glamping, you're talking about boat trails, walkways, you're talking about boating, all those recreation activities. The problem, I suppose, for people listening in this morning, the people like I know in the Midlands and you know, is that the salary scales, the income is going to be a lot different. When I was born in the Midlands, my brother worked on board, my late brother worked on board na Mona, and at the height of the season, they could come home with maybe £1,000, £1,200 a week from Bord na Mona. They were when the sun was shining, they worked every hour that God gave them. And regrettably, what's happened now is we've had a collapse of salaries, huge collapse in incomes, and people are going to have to start again in tourism. And it won't bring in that sort of money initially, right, but it will bring in some.
So looking at maybe, you know, what the IDA has to do in terms of the heavy lifting for the other big jobs that will provide the towns with the high value jobs that you're talking about, what needs to go in its stead? Is it more the rollout of broadband? Is it more investment in sustainable energy? What is it? What will attract it, in your view?
We need to make huge changes, because, you know, I, in the course of writing the book, I spoke to people like Ciarán Mullooly, the former Labour relations man who was in charge of the Just Transition Commission. He was pulling his hair out doing the job because of the lack of planning supports. And this great new phrase, spatial justice. What's that mean? It means that if you go to try and start something in any industry in the Midlands at the moment, you're looking at a 2 to 3 year delay because of planning infrastructure. Ciarán kept saying to me, and kept saying to the people down there, we need to be able to change things in 6 months or 12 months. We need special areas of the Midlands designated for development of different types. And it's not as if it's new. We're not creating a new wheel or anything like that. In Poland, it's in the book, I deal with a province called Silesia in Poland, where they actually designated the areas way out, albeit more than 2 years out, for specific types of industry. Tax breaks came with it, zone designation came with it. it, and it got easier to do planning because Kieran Mulvey held his hands up in the end and said, I give up here. I can't change anything overnight. We're going to have to build and build and build. And that's where this major issue is, that we never got the just transition. Just one quick one on a column. The just transition issue. In Germany, they closed down hundreds and hundreds of coal mines. They had a 28-year just transition period. In the Midlands, we closed two power stations. We had 28 months.
Right. Now, is that a reflection of the fact that Germany, well, first of all, they started earlier. They were able to close down coal to a certain degree. They had nuclear as the backup there. But in Ireland, we were always being told that the great potential is in renewable sources. Yet if you drive through a lot of places in the Midlands, including around where I live in Kildare, you'll often see signs up to no to windmills.
Yeah.
So can you give any insight into what the objection to that particular power source is and what drives the animosity towards it?
I was at a public meeting in Galway on Tuesday night, and this very issue came up in terms of opposition to things. And everything else. The general public will say to you, for starters, if there was a clear, coherent policy and we could see how we would benefit directly, we'd be happy. They were telling me about 200 new houses built on the west side of Galway with no solar panels, with no renewable energy being used at all. And they were saying, why is it being forced on us in the country at the same time as they're not doing anything in the city in some parts? I think the biggest issue in regard to this, it's in the book nearly every chapter, is this kind of issue that we're really all for greenness and we're all for doing things. But people in the Midlands, in particular Field Column, they're being picked on. They look at things, they lost their two power stations. They knew it was coming. But they look at people like China, where China has quadrupled the amount of new coal power stations. In the year 21-22, they commissioned two new coal power stations per week in China. We closed two in the Midlands as part of policy. Because why? Because they were low-hanging fruit. It was a way of doing it. Is it going to save the world? Not while China are continuing to do it.
Sure, but Ireland has signed up to certain emissions targets. It has to meet them, or it's going to face fines from Europe for not meeting those targets. And it's also not going to be able to have the moral authority to encourage other countries to follow suit who maybe haven't even industrialised yet.
Yeah, but this is why people in board, the workers in Bordermona say to me that, you know, we're not against this, but we weren't prepared for it. We didn't have a transition period to meet that target. And they give an example of what happened, say when the power stations closed 2 years ago. Last year, we burned more coal and more oil than ever before in Moneypoint. I mean, the Green Party, and everyone knows this, that it's a bit of, it really
sure,
is
but
a charade.
The problem with burning peat is, number one, it's not efficient, and number two, you're taking it out of bogs that could be regenerated as carbon sinks. So there's a double whammy there. Whereas when China builds power stations, it may not be good for emissions, but they're getting the heat from that coal. And similarly in other places on the continent, they're getting the heat from that coal that's far more efficient than peat.
But the people, I know it in the Midlands, they're bright, intelligent young workers. They say to us, why didn't we invest in more research in hydrogen? Why didn't we look at those areas? Why didn't we start that work early on? Why drop us off the cliff? Because it's politically expedient, it's cool to be green. Could we not have been given a period of transition where we could have developed? There is a new hydrogen plant happening on the west of Ireland that's just gone to planning. There are proposals for Shannon Bridge and for Lanesborough, where the two are there. But give it a chance. Give people a chance. There's a picture in my book of a thousand people marching with a banner saying fair play. We want fair play. And most of the people I spoke to over the course of the book didn't get fair play.
All right. Kieran, I suppose, you know, at the outset, I was kind of wondering what the audience for this book is. And you might also ask what the constituency for this book is, because you touch on things like, you know, fair pay rates for the Defence Forces, which was a stable employer around the Midlands. You're talking about the just transition. There's an implicit dig at the Greens in all of this. Is this heralding an entry into party politics, maybe?
Absolutely not. I have to say at the outset.
Never?
Since I left RTE, I've been approached, and I'll be straight about this because it's been reported, I've been approached by Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and Labour about party politics. I don't know why Sinn Féin haven't approached me, by the way. I'm not quite sure about that.
Well, you could ring them and ask them,
told,
sure.
I've told them all the thing. I have, the only project I have in mind, particularly next year, everyone is focusing on Europe in terms of what I was supposed to be doing. My only project for next year in June, Colm, is the Leaving Cert student in my house, my son Brian.
Right.
That genuine. At
that
this
sees
stage,
you through the local and Europeans. What about the general election?
I really have no interest in it. I really have. I mean, and the people say the book is not just about Bordermona, by the way. It's about all of the stuff we've done since I left RTE.
It is
with
about
my son as well.
And one of the things was fundraising to help refugees fleeing the war in Ukraine. There's a proposal on page one of the Irish Examiner today talking about, it's from Catherine Day and the group that was set up to look into direct provision and refugee accommodation in the state, talking about potentially compulsory purchase powers in order to get accommodation, modular accommodation and the like for Ukrainian refugees. In your experience dealing with fundraising and dealing with communities and welcoming people in, what is the way to strike that balance between providing the accommodation and bringing communities along to see the benefits of helping people?
I'll give it to you straight the way I see it in my job column, the Ukrainian refugee accommodation model. You know, when we came in initially, there was no accommodation, yet we found the accommodation. In the book, there's a chapter about the way a derelict Irish Wheelchair Association Divine Missionaries hostel out in Roscommon was left empty, was turned around in a week by the Lions Club people in Roscommon, and I still believe there are plenty of other buildings around. Before we get to CPOs, there are plenty of other buildings. Look, for instance, at the Curragh camp. I'm told there's 56 unoccupied houses in the Curragh camp. They're all over the country. If you go to towns like Eden, Derry and County Offaly, there are still dozens of apartments, empty. So I would be suggesting to people to try and work with communities the way I've seen it working in Roscommon. We have over 1,000 refugees living in County.
How would you see that job. CPO proposal going down, do you think?
It's a hammer, isn't it? It's a hammer coming to deal with it. And I think it should be the last resort, because at the end of the day, I work with the asylum seekers at the EROC Centre in Ballyhadrin in County Roscommon. They want to be part of the community. They don't want any aggravation. They want to blend in, and they are blending in. They are moving into the community, and they're doing very well so far, you know.
All right, great. Well, the best of luck with life in the future with the community development. The book is The Future Is Now, Life After RTE and Stories of Just Transition and Renewal in Rural Ireland by Ciarán Mullooly, and that's published by the Independent Publishing Network. It's out now, and coming up in the next hour, if you're wondering what to watch in October, Brian Redden and Aoife Barry have their top picks on the big and the small screen for the month ahead, and ahead of the budget, with RTE back in the Oireachtas Committee, our gathering will be here to look back over all the news stories in the week.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.